way Lance likes it.
No, he doesn't like stiff cheesecake. Okay, welcome to a live, very special edition of whatever the heck this is. I don't know if this is comic book couples counseling, comic book keepers, geekly grinds, special edition.
Comic-Con counseling. I don't know what it is.
Comic-Con counseling keepers.
There you go.
I don't. That's way too much. Anyways, hello, everyone.
Stiff cheesecake.
we'll get into that later. I think we're getting ahead of the curve here. Yeah, don't spoil. No spoilers. Well, anyway, hello everyone. My name is Jeremy, aka Mithrandial, the Geekly Grind, and I'm joined today by Lance Watkins of Comic Book Keepers.
Hello, hello. Ready to talk some nerdy stuff.
And of course, Brad from Comic Book Couples Canceling.
Hello.
And we have had Brad was very impressed with how he just greeted everyone. I don't know why that was. But anyways, we've had a very full day here at WonderCon Day 1. And we are excited to just kind of reflect on the day and what happened, including a very last-minute opportunity for our good friend Brad over here. But we'll get to that in a second. I've been coming to WonderCon for a few years now. Lance, how many times have you been to WonderCon now?
This is my first WonderCon.
Really? I thought you... Oh, that's right. You haven't come with me on
this. This is both Brad and mine first WonderCon.
Okay.
Wonder Virgins.
I think that was probably a series at some point.
This is the alternative name for the Wonder Twins, but they don't talk about it.
They don't talk about that. Right, so I...
Fleet got down, though.
Yeah.
Fleet got down.
By the way, this podcast is rated T for teens. But anyway, so I've been coming to WonderCon for a while, and I've kind of preached the awesomeness that is WonderCon to anybody who would listen. I've always really enjoyed this show. It's held in Anaheim, for those who aren't aware. It's sort of the baby sister to San Diego Comic-Con, and, you know, boasts around between 40 to 60,000. That's a very rough approximation. Please, data nerds, don't come at me over that if I'm wrong. But around that many in terms of attendees, and it's just a really great show. And so, yeah, great to introduce Lance and Brad to WonderCon.
Yeah, I mean, this was a con that, to me, it's like the con-goer's con. Like, you talk to people who've gone to WonderCon, they're always like, you gotta go. No, it's like San Diego, but it's chill, and your access to the talent is, like, you know, perfect. You just got to go to this one. I always resisted it because I hear you, but also it's the smaller sibling to San Diego Comic-Con, and I'm so in the bag for that con. Everyone's right. Everyone has ever told me that WonderCon is legit. Is correct. I was floored by it.
I am blown away by how much FaceTime we've gotten with creators already.
That's the word I was looking for. FaceTime.
Yeah. I could not believe the opportunities we were afforded within minutes of the floor opening.
Yeah.
And we'll get into some of the amazing opportunities we had. But being able to just walk by booths and not have like a mile-long line at certain creators is mind-blowing and exciting, and I'm already excited to come back to the next WonderCon.
But it's not like it's a ghost town either.
No.
Like, it's full.
There's plenty of people.
Like, everyone's doing their own thing.
Everything feels really spaced out.
Yeah.
Like, even this convention center, it's like the TARDIS on the inside. It doesn't look like it is as big as it really is on the inside.
Yeah.
There's so much.
Yeah. There's a lot of space on the inside, and the programming is certainly not the same type of programming that you would see at San Diego Comic Con, and I think that's part of what earns it the reputation of being the little sibling.
Like the big studio presence isn't there.
Yeah, that might be a draw.
Yeah, and it's not an absence. I mean, they have little things here and there, but
right.
I mean, it's not like, you know, Marvel's not coming here, or Marvel Studios isn't coming here with like a big presentation.
No,
and James Gunn's not unloading, you know, the next wave of the.
He's here.
CEO.
I bet he's here.
I bet he's here as a shopper.
Yeah, he's like a stormtrooper.
Yeah, he's hiding out.
So we're here. Day one, drove in last night, got settled in, And
we're all bunk mates.
We are bunk mates. We're bunking down. It's been pretty good. And the again, if you're not familiar with the show, the hotels, both the Marriott and the Hilton, are literally steps away from the convention
center. I've never been this close to a convention, and it's going to ruin me for every other convention going forward. 100%. You know, you go down the elevator, you walk out, you're in the convention center. Like, what is this miracle?
Yeah. We legitimately walked 100 feet in front of our hotel, and we were in line for the convention center.
Yeah. And while we waited in line, we're surrounded by food trucks. I ate maybe the best breakfast burrito of my life. And I've already, you know, like, that was just like the tip of my joy. That sounds disgusting, but that was the tip of my joy.
Say it again.
Tip of my joy.
Stop saying
tip
it.
Tip of my joy. Okay.
Try the joyous tip.
Yeah. The joyous tip of a mighty mouth.
This is a podcast. This podcast is rated M for mature.
Okay.
Well, two of us have.
Yeah.
Anyway. So yes, the proximity is amazing. The vibe and the attendance and the overall distribution has been really good.
Food trucks is awesome.
And the food trucks.
Food truck.
I absolutely agree. I had a breakfast burrito as well this morning. It was really good. So, first things first this morning, what did we do, gentlemen? What was our first stop today when the exhibit hall opened? What were we doing?
We all mutually agreed that priority number one was getting in line for Daniel Warren Johnson's potential chance at getting a sketch done by him. This is going to be a 4x6 inch sketch, and you can pick whatever character you want. It's something that is never available at your bigger cons. Those things are gone the second the doors open.
Yeah.
And so as soon as the doors open, we power walked our way over to that booth, hoping for a chance of one of us.
Lance and Jeremy were so quick. You guys were power walking.
We made good time. Yeah. I felt bad. I thought we were losing Brad behind us. I was like, we might lose him, but it's okay.
I pulled out my living in New York for 2 years walk. Yeah. That's where it came from.
I'm walking-y.
Yeah. And we get to the booth, and there's already a line of people. And honestly, I went into the day thinking, there's, what, 5 of these available max?
Yeah.
Per day.
I think we really need to stress, like, you can never get this at San Diego Comic-Con. You can't get this at C2E2. I mean, and we didn't get up super early.
No.
We slept in, I would say.
Comparatively, yeah. This isn't like you're camping out at Hall H. Like, we got up, we were out the door, I think, at 8:30 this morning.
Then
got down to Convention Way, got some food at the food trucks. We began going into the hall itself.
When we got into that line, you go, oh, well, we actually probably have a pretty good shot of getting on that commission list for DWJ. But, you know, I'm not gonna stress myself out about it. But then we get there, there's a short line, but again, like you're saying, is it 5 tickets that they're giving out? You know, just a handful?
Is
it a lottery? Well, because what happens is they start handing out all the tickets, and suddenly I had a ticket in my hand. I was like, well, surely this isn't one for an actual commission. This has to be a lottery situation. Yeah. And they're like, no, we're doing 10, and you're the 10.
That's it. They're like, no. Like, literally, they were handing out a pad, like they put one in my hand, they were like, 5. They put one in my hand, they were like, 6. And I was like, okay. And so we asked the guy how many he was doing. They said 10. And so, we got there right under the wire.
Yeah. And I was not planning at all to get one. But then you guys are getting one. I'm not going to let you guys have one. Me not have one. So
I had to. We are the worst influences on each other.
So
it happens so many times. We'll talk more about that later, but we're just really bad at, like, egging each other on at buying things that we probably don't need to. However, we all agree that a Daniel Warren Johnson commission is well worth the money. So
essential.
We read that first.
And to point out the fact, when we got there and we're like, okay, but how much are they? Because we knew it was going to be a decent amount.
Yeah.
I was banking on $250. I think, Brett, you said it was
300. Yeah.
And we only had to pay $150 for an original artwork sketch of our choosing.
Yeah.
From one of the greatest artists in the industry right now.
Yeah, it's unreal.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so right there, I'm ready to go home.
Yeah,
done. I haven't even had the commission yet.
Yeah.
I just got the ticket.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is the best con.
you can find, by the way, pictures of our respective sketches on our social media. However, just for the sake of everyone to know what we got, Lance, what did you get?
I requested a sketch of Optimus Prime. Mm-hmm. I have a kind of shrine in one of my shelves at home that has a giant-sized Funko Pop of Optimus Prime that was given to me by another podcasting buddy, Josh from Four Nerds by Nerds. He sent it over just because he found out I didn't have one. I have like other couple figures of Optimus, and so I just love the character, grew up on the show, the various iterations.
You use that magic card too, I think I gave you, right?
You gave me a magic card of Optimus Prime, which is super cool. And the fact that we've been seeing Daniel do so many various like mechs in his shows on his YouTube channel, everyone go and watch his YouTube channel. But he did like Optimus Prime pretty recently, and I was floored by his line work and everything on it. So I needed it to go into that area of my home.
Yep, 100%. Yeah. What about you, Brad? What'd you get?
So I had to call Lisa, one, not to get approval to spend the money on the commission.
He had to get approval.
But, you know, I wanted to make sure that she'd be happy with whatever commission we got, because she's just as big a fan of Dan as we are. And her favorite character that Dan does is Beta Ray Bill. So we wanted a Beta Ray Bill, but we wanted something that sort of reflected the deep emotion that the climax of his miniseries has. Right. And so I requested like the depowered Corbinite form of Beta Ray Bill. And, you know, you're always wondering, well, how's he going to interpret that? And, man, I ended up getting like a 2-for-1 deal, because he does the depowered version of Beta Ray Bill in like this shadow, like kind of an homage to like the Incredible Hulk, and the shadow or the looming...
The silhouette. Image,
the silhouette, that's the word. Yeah. The silhouette is of, you know, the powered up, more familiar Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah.
And I was stunned by it.
Yeah.
You know, just seeing him getting to do it in person also. Obviously, you watch him do this stuff on his YouTube page, but to actually see him create something out of nothing.
Yeah, it's a trip.
But we got to talk about yours.
Yeah, so mine was a lot of fun. So I had gotten X from Mega Man X done by Nick Dragotta. I actually commissioned it third party through a buddy, through a Facebook group that I'm in. And he was going to New York Comic Con, and he knew Dragotta was going to be there. And I'm like, you know, I really want to get some custom art from Dragotta. I really loved his work on East of West. I loved his work in Ghost Cage. And it just really lines up with, you know, getting art done of X, because Mega Man is one of the comic series I collect, and I just love him as a character, etc. So I had that. And I thought, for the longest time, like the minute I got that piece, I thought, I want to get a DWJ piece of Zero to go with it. And that's what I did. So I walked up to the booth, Brad's smiling at me right now, but like, I walked up to the booth and I brought the Dragotta piece as like a reference, almost, to say, I got this done by Nick Dragotta. I would love for you, Daniel Warren Johnson, to do a Zero piece. And immediately, like, he was like, he was on Google, he was looking, like, you could tell.
I mean, like, an energy went through him, like this devilish, you know,
desire
to, like, I'm going to beat Dragotta. Yeah. Right?
Because, you know, Lance and I have talked about this, too, and we still are trying to find this picture, but they did a collaborative commission piece for Evangelion, like Ava Units 1 and 2, I think it was.
Yes, it was 1 and 2.
And it was insane. It was absolutely unbelievable. So I just love the way that they kind of play off of each other, and so I really want to do that. And so watched him bring that piece to life, and it is amazing. And looking at the two pieces side by side, you would think they came out of the same art book, you know.
What was awesome about that moment, though, is, you know, he signs obviously all his work, you know, DWJ, right? But with yours, like, as he was ripping through that illustration, he was getting more and more excited about what he was doing, and he was like very like childish in his giddiness.
Yeah.
And so he gets done with it, and the moment he got done with it, the way he signed it, it was like this splashy, large DWJ across the whole commission.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, okay, I'm on fire, bring in the next one. He immediately just wanted to jump into the next commission, because he was so jazzed off of that one.
It was something special. It was a really cool moment.
It was so cool. And the way he did Zero Sword, with like the whiteout in that book, it was so well done.
What I love about it is, you know, he's not that familiar with that character design, so he had to bring it up on his phone.
Yeah, yeah.
But he looks at it, and then he takes that design, and then he changes the perspective of that design, puts it into this incredibly kinetic position, this very violent action with the sword coming down. And, I mean, it is a magic trick.
It,
It was a cool bookend to the journey of you getting those two pieces together. And it's also interesting because our first con that we ever went together, we got a shirt of Mega Man and you got Zero.
That's right, yeah.
And that was like our first experience of getting merch at a con together.
Yeah.
So seeing those two pieces was amazing. I also want to point out the fact that when with these sketches, it says on their paper that they're just going to be a head and like shoulder bust. Yeah. We all got full body sketches on our cards.
Yeah,
he was being very generous.
Very generous. It wasn't just for us. He was definitely giving that same level of attention to others. And just before we kind of move on to what happened next, I think maybe we kind of like lump all of our collective experience with Daniel Warren Johnson at his booth today, because there was another thing that happened later on with his panel. But, you know, it was something that really stood out to Lance and I, because Brad was at a panel, I think, or doing some other stuff.
Yeah, I was at the DC panel.
So there was a moment where an artist came up to DWJ and basically showed him some panels of work that he was doing, and it was on his iPad. It was in Procreate, and he essentially was just asking Daniel for tips. He was asking him for some feedback, and you know, I'm not an artist, so I can't really necessarily appreciate like the level of feedback that one might expect going to a creator like Daniel Warren Johnson at a convention. But what I can absolutely tell you is I would not expect what we saw, which was he went through a number of these pages, looked through all of it, captured screenshots of two of them, and then went back into Procreate and used the images as references to give an in-depth lesson. It took probably about 8 to 10 minutes in total of saying, hey, look at this page. This is what you want to do. Here's how you use white space. Here's how you use dimension space.
Silhouettes as framing.
Like, it was a, honestly, like, again, neither of us, Lance or I, are artists, but like just kind of standing in the presence of that, we were so, like, I was literally getting emotional, like just seeing his investment in like the future artists who come to him in this sort of like, you know, like the kid bringing the macaroni art, you know, to mom, right? Like, is this good? Like, you know, whatever. And just the level of intentionality that he had and the feedback.
It just shows me like the responsibility that being someone with this talent is, right? Yeah. Like, and that, you know, I'm sure he can't be that person every day.
No, not to everyone all the time. Yeah, he can't.
But to see him go like, okay, well, here's somebody who wants to be where I'm at, and here's an opportunity for me to give him some tips, give him some of the information that's in my head, what I've learned, in like a quick little lesson. And like, I find it to be like truly a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
That is it pretty special, because you don't see that when you're in line with every artist at Comic-Con.
In those moments where we're sitting there at the booth, you would think, like, taking 8 to 10 minutes with one single person, you would think that maybe the rest of the people in line might be a little bit annoyed, frustrated that it's taking that long. Literally every single person in this line was on, like, pins and needles, also listening to this, even though they are not artists either.
Yeah.
And taking this moment in of seeing a person that they respect so much in this industry be so kind and take this time to really show something, which this person is going to take away from, and I'm sure was also, they were beaming at the end of it.
Yeah.
And it finished with Daniel saying, come back to me next year and show me your work.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Like, who else does that?
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Talk about an encouragement, right? Like, to walk away from a session like that and to have the encouragement of somebody who took the time to teach you those lessons and say, I want to see you next year. I want to see how you've improved. I want to see more of your work.
I think Felix Comic Art does a great job of scheduling his table, right?
100%. So they do a great job.
Come in like from this time, we're going to do commission sketches. And everybody who's in that line, you know, the 10 people who are there, no one is like rushing, like no one's stressed out about, you know, being the next person, like, when's it going to be my time? Everyone's like, oh, how's he tackling this? Oh, Astro Boy? This guy's asking for Astro Boy? Let's watch Astro Boy get made.
Yeah.
Everyone is so just excited to be there in the presence of the work. And then they have the schedule, like, well, now from 1 to 3 is the signing time right before his panel.
Yep.
And that's when you get moments like that. And then everybody who's in that line is engaged in getting what they are. Like, no one is stepping over each other, talking over each other. They're all just, like, excited to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, we were there for the... So we did the sketch in the morning, and then we went back in the afternoon for the signing. We saw that, you know, kind of great moment happen. Lance and I both got sketches done in our do a powerbomb trades, which looked great. Really cool quote on the back, too, from this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Called Comic Book Couples Counseling. Pretty
that,
neat.
I want to be buried with that trade paperback.
I think that could be arranged. but, yeah, so that was a really, really great to return and kind of get those signatures done. But following the morning sketches, we took a trip over to Bandai Namco. So Lance and I did a little walkabout at the Bandai Namco booth, got introduced to a lot of really cool products, you know, Nanoblock products. Justin Cavender, who's our senior marketing manager, kind of walked us through showcasing, you know, really, I was really impressed by the breadth of, you know, price points and like customers.
The prices were fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, like I saw some really great statues and figures that were like half of what I would expect them to be.
Yeah.
Like $60 to $70, really, really cool detail.
There was a $35 Gundam statue that I don't like. I was a periphery fan of Gundam. Like, I had the PlayStation video game. Like, I loved that side of things, but I've never dove into the anime full in, and I want to now. But they were just so well made that it makes me want them.
Yeah.
And I might end up with one before I get
done. I think you should get it.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a few things that are on our to buy list already. So,
but the cool thing is their nanoblocks. There are characters that are 8-bit characters that look perfect.
Yeah, in that nanoblock model. Yeah.
There is their Crash Bandicoot one looks insanely good.
You said earlier that it looked like it literally came out of the game.
It looks like it does.
It
came straight out of the game.
That's so good. It's really good. But yeah, to my earlier point, you know, just it was really cool to see the various price points, and you can really tell that Bandai Namco is thinking about their entire fan base. Like, they're not just building high-end Gundam models for the nerds that like break out all the fancy tools and everything else. They're making the simple ones, the super deformed models, and like all the way up through the real grade, you know, models if you want those. And then in every kind of lineup of the major IPs they control with Demon Slayer and Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z and, you know, Jujutsu Kaisen and Pokemon, all that stuff, they've got a fantastic range, honestly, of things to explore.
Star Wars,
yeah, that was up there too. So, yeah, that was a great walkthrough of the booth. Got to kind of dig in a bit deeper there. Hopefully, we'll be getting to dig into a bit more of their product and, you know, getting some more unboxings and reviews and stuff like that. But that'll be a bit further down the road. And so, while that was happening concurrently, meanwhile, across the city, Brad was at the Dawn of DC panel.
Yeah, it was a fairly stacked panel. Tom King and Mitch Jarrett's there to talk about Batman Brave and the Bold. They showed some pages from it. I don't even think I'd seen those pages yet that they'd shown. Mitch Jarrett's like take on the Joker is like really upsetting.
Mm.
And Jarrett's talked about how Batman the Animated Series is like the be-all and end-all for him regarding Batman, and that there's no beating Mark Hamill's Joker, and he's really trying to bring some of that Mark Hamill energy into his Joker, but in the way that Mark Hamill's Joker could switch from legitimately funny to terrifying on a dime, and that's what he's really going for with Brave and the Bold. And based on what I've seen on the pages, I think he's doing something new and interesting, although he had a little anecdote about his wife sees his new pages. He's like, look what I'm trying to do here, doing something different. She's like, yeah, it looks like the same 9 panels.
Oh.
And he's like, well, that's Tom King's fault.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
And so that was good. And Dennis Culver was there talking about the new Doom Patrol book. I know nothing about Doom Patrol. I've always been curious about Doom Patrol. And I'm always excited when there's a new number one to jump on.
Sure.
So I probably will follow him over there. They're doing... I'm not into variant covers. And I hate kind of promoting variant covers because it's just such a... Just such an industry. such a dollar suck. Yeah. But they're doing these scratch-off variant covers for Doom Patrol. It's five variants. And each one... is like, so it's Crazy Jane looking in the mirror, and you scratch off the mirror, and then there's something different behind each one. And you don't know which one you're getting.
Oh my.
So, like,
it's like
you buy five, do you buy 10, do you buy 20?
So it's gonna be like secret variants.
Yeah. And like, that is so nefarious.
That's a blind bag comic.
It's a blind bag comic. Yeah.
So good.
No, I need that.
Yeah.
So bad.
So I'm all about that. Teeny Howard was there talking about Catwoman and Harley Quinn.
Yep.
And my favorite comment that she had about Catwoman was that she's writing Catwoman as if it was a Scorsese film in which Scorsese realized the most interesting characters in his movies were the women. So what's the best thing about Casino? Sharon Stone.
Yeah.
Right? Like, let's follow Sharon Stone in Casino.
Yeah.
Rather than the other guys. And I thought that was
really not astute. So different, you and me.
Yeah. I thought it was an astute observation, and I'm like, I'm on board from that point of view.
Yeah.
And then her Harley Quinn is with Sweeney Boo, and Sweeney Boo is like the perfect artist for Harley Quinn.
Wonder Woman.
Yeah, oh yeah.
What I got talked about. I want to hear more about Wonder Woman, because I'm kind of interested in
that. Oh yeah, there's a great quote. I wrote it down somewhere. Go look at the Comic Book Couples Council Twitter feed. See what's
podcast. You're like, I'm not looking at this right now.
But it was something about the lot, you know, like the fact that, like, when Wonder Woman came out, she was a rebel. You know, she stood outside the status quo, and he wants to write Wonder Woman as that rebel, as somebody who's
right.
not part of the system.
Yep.
And, you know, when you hear, like, Tom King doing Wonder Woman, I can understand why you're like, I don't, like, is that the right pairing for that? Character and writer, and my response to that is like, well, Tom King's on a roll right now. Like, he's shooting straight fire with all his books, and if you're not reading, you know, Human Target, Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, Gotham City Year One, you're missing out. So I'm on board, but that comment there about Wonder Woman being
a rebel, an outsider,
and you know, anti-system.
Yeah,
sure. That connects to me.
Yeah, awesome. All right, so Donna DC panel happened. Oh, we also, kind of around that point, I'm just kind of skipping around a little bit, but in that same general time frame, we actually went to see Tom King and Mitch Jarrett's, to get some books signed and
long
say hello.
Line.
Long line. And Lance and I had, you know, it's funny because you were talking about earlier in the Daniel Warren Johnson experience, you would think that, you know, somebody taking long, maybe Lance was saying this, you know, somebody taking long, you know, people might get a little bit frustrated, right? But everyone was kind of like in a good spirited
mood. Yeah, because we're all good, happy people. We're all looking out for each other.
Of
guys.
Course.
Always.
Always. Even when the person in front of us, right at the end of the line, like 10 minutes before their panel was due to happen.
I believe they were late to the panel because of this.
Brings 30 books for both Mitch and Tom to sign.
And didn't even unbag the comics.
Yeah, this was driving Lance crazy. Like they weren't even unbagging and unbagging them.
There is a certain convention etiquette
right.
that you should have.
Yeah.
Normally, conventions will limit how many books you bring to a table per signing. They'll do like 10 and be like, okay, come back again later, type of thing. This didn't have a limit, and not only did it not have a limit, but the person didn't understand to like prep everything for them. So the poor assistant was trying to like unbag all
I
these
felt
books.
Really bad for her.
And shout out to Mandy.
And it,
Mandy. Shout out to Mandy. Yeah.
And it wasn't like he would pull out a certain number. And then she would count them all up, have it everything registered. And then he would go back into his bag and pull more.
It was like
out.
Mary Poppins up
and
in
so
here.
So she was having to be like, okay, how many of these are getting signed by both of them? How many? Because it's $5 per signature
per person yeah.
that you're getting things signed from. So she was having to basically do calculus to figure out like which one went with which. And it was, you could see the stress on her face. and just having to deal with it, and then she's also trying to unbag things at the same time.
So and they're on the timeline, right? Like she's
they're about to go to like their panel.
Yeah.
And yeah. we are literally the last two people on
the line. The last one's in line.
And then this happens. I was like, you've got to be kidding
me. So funny.
Last chance to learn. Yeah, Brad was laughing from a distance. Yeah. But it all worked out. It all got done. And, you know, and to be fair, you know, Tom King was very gracious and thankful. They were so, nice they were so sweet. And honestly, like, on the surface, as a fan who was just looking to get four things signed in total behind these folks, I was frustrated. However, you know, after further reflection, I'm still frustrated. However, Tom mentioned, like, you're putting, you know, food on my table. You know, like, you're supporting me as a fan. Obviously, you have a lot of passion around the work that I do with Mitch, and you brought all these works as a testament to that. And, you know, that's...
nice that he was at the end of the line.
That's pretty good.
It's unfortunate he's right in front of you two.
Yeah, I mean, in another world... You know, it's kind of like at the grocery store, you know, when, like, you got that person with the cart full of groceries and you're coming up with a, you know, loaf of garlic bread and some ice cream. Like, you just let them go first, you know?
Yeah. If you have 30 books and you're the third to last person in line.
Just go to the end of the line, buddy. Okay. Anyway. But we got those books signed. It was great. Mitch did a little custom sketch for us in our hardcover.
Yeah, which was a total surprise.
Total surprise.
I'm also finding out more and more creators as you bring, like, the deluxe editions, the hardcovers, they know, like, the investment you put into their product, and they appreciate it so much that they give you things that you were not expecting, and that's happened before with other creators as well.
Yeah, what was cool about this was that Doc Shaner was also there.
Yeah.
And so Strange Adventures finally got that signed by all three of them.
Yeah, you were stoked about that. You said you made a fool of yourself? With Doc, you said?
I am very, like, I got really fanish. sometimes when you get really excited and you put somebody on a pedestal and you want to tell them that, you're like, you know, you mean a lot to me. You're hard work. I mean, Tom and Mitch, same deal. But I've dealt with them now more often.
Yeah.
Not so much with Doc. And then, you know, so I got a little, like, stumbly fumbly and, you know, sweaty.
That was funny. Okay. Yeah. It was a long day already.
We all get a little sweaty sometimes.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Everybody sweats. So we did that.
Stan Sakai. You
were doing the Stan Sakai. Yeah, tell us.
And, you know, living legend. And at the WonderCon right now, they have the variants of the upcoming Where When miniseries, first issue came out. You know, IDW and Dogu. Oh gosh, I'm blanking on his imprint name.
I can look it up while you keep talking.
Grogu? Is it Grogu?
Grogu's Mandalorian.
Yeah. His imprint is coming
in. Mace Windu.
His Mace Windu imprint. But anyway, they're collaborating and they're doing, you know, new miniseries. Ninja Turtles. What is it?
Dogu.
Dogu, thank you. Dogu. They're doing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Meet Usagi Yojimbo, and it's serving as a prequel to the Usagi Yojimbo series Senso, which is one of my favorite Usagi Yojimbo stories. And IDW puts it out in color. They've been putting out all of Stan's comics in color. You know, I like the color just fine, but to me, Usagi needs to be in black and white.
Right.
And so for WonderCon, they did a black and white variant of the first issue, so I had to get that. And he was doing remarks for a relatively cheap price.
Yeah.
Our friend Jesse got one for $20 is what he told us. That's not what my bill said.
Yeah, Jesse. What's up with that?
Jesse got a good deal.
False representation. We're calling up Mates and Weights and Measures.
Yeah. So I got the $40 version, but also still really, really cool.
$40 variant.
$40 variant.
The scratch off?
Yeah. So no regrets about that. And Stan was super cool. And Stan even like pulled his phone out to show us images of the upcoming Dark Horse Comics relaunch, which they haven't really shown anybody yet.
Okay.
So we got to see the covers of that stuff, and it looks dope. Can't wait. I'm so happy that Usagi's back at Dark Horse Comics.
Yeah.
No offense to IDW, but it just belongs at Dark Horse.
And so Brad was getting stuff at Sakai, and then we did a little walkabout of the floor for a little bit, but Brad was gearing up for something a little bit later that afternoon.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, so tell us, Brad, what ended up happening? What had you busy at 5 p.m. on Friday March the 24th in the year of our Lord, 2023.
Oh, I moderated my first WonderCon panel.
Yeah, you did.
Warren Johnson, they did a spotlight panel of him at 5 o'clock, and that was not something that I was anticipating, but I guess there was a conflict with the previous moderator, and Danny emailed me the night before. He's like, tomorrow, 5 o'clock, you want to moderate? And I was like, yes. You never say no to Danny Warren Johnson. And I thought it went well.
It was great. It went really well.
I keep seeking affirmation from these two.
No, he doesn't. Okay, let's be clear. He's not seeking any affirmation at all. We're providing the affirmation that's well due because he did a very good job.
Thank you.
So
and everyone can probably go check it out on Danny Warren Johnson's YouTube channel because he recorded the whole thing. So it might all be there.
That's awesome. You know, it was. I mean, I just treated it like a. Like him being on the podcast, it was just another interview. And he wanted to talk about the earlier stuff. He really wanted to focus on the earlier work and how that built him to be a better cartoonist, to make him the cartoonist he is today. Yeah. And I thought that was like a fun little way to start things off. And it was nice to, you know, get some pretty honest responses from him about Alabaster. There's a whole documentary they can make about his experiences on there. And I would watch every second of it.
Yeah.
Talking about Space Mullet and
Gus Lee.
I don't think I really realized how important Green Leader was.
Yeah.
The Star Wars fan comic to him finding the joy of being the writer and the artist.
Yeah.
You know, and no longer pursuing the collaboration thing. He found the confidence to just, like, I can be all me in a product.
That's something that struck me, like, that moment, because you've had him on your show before.
Yeah.
I've had him on my show before. We've met him at multiple cons, and I've listened to him on other interviews. I've never heard that story.
Yeah, I haven't heard that before either, right? Yeah. And Green Leader, you know, he does these fan comics, these, like, mini comics that you have to be at his booth. If you want one, you know, you get a
donation.
You make a donation to the and you know, it's like a Star Wars mini comic. He's got Old Man Skywalker, there's the Klingon comic, the Pacific Rim comic.
Which is phenomenal. That's his new one.
Liz and I both picked it up.
So good. But like that Green Leader, really in those few pages of that book does everything that Murder Falcon does. It does everything that Duo Powerbomb is. It's like, it looks cool, it looks rad, it's taking this moment from Return of the Jedi, and that was like a very memorable moment when you were a kid, you know, like this kamikaze A-Wing pilot. And then it inserts who that pilot was through flashback and memory, and by the time that he goes into that Super Star Destroyer, you feel his loss. He's now no longer just a cameo. So everything you love about Daniel Warren Johnson, he does it in Green Leader. And like that is really like the beginning of who he is now.
That's his formula now.
Yeah.
But and when I say formula, I don't mean he does the same thing every time. What he does is he subverts your expectations. He tells a story in a direction you weren't expecting. But it's always an ending that feels true, complete, and earned.
Yeah, I thought that was also kind of fun to talk to him about. You know, why does he like to support?
Yeah, I was taken by that.
He sets up a story. The story's obviously going in this way. And then suddenly you get to like the sixth issue and you're like, hold up, what? What is this comic?
He said, I was really taken by this. He said, genre fiction often gives you what you want.
It spoon feeds you.
And it gives you what you want most of the time. And so he loves to change it up.
Yeah.
He likes to twist it on you, but is always well intentioned, right?
Yeah.
Like Lance said, like he always aims to have the ending still make sense, feel complete,
and it's never a betrayal to either the narrative or the character.
No, ever.
It's not ever cheap.
The rug is never pulled out from under you.
Yeah,
you always like you want to end a comic on an uplifting note for a lot of times. Like sometimes you want to be sad. Like it's fitting, but with those stories that he tells, you end on like a happy note, but it hits you hard in the feels.
Like a happy note or a bittersweet note.
Bittersweet's good. I mean, Extremity was bittersweet.
I mean, Duel Powerbomb's like bittersweet.
Yeah, Duel Powerbomb's bittersweet. Murder Falcon is bittersweet.
So
that's the word.
Yeah.
You think, I don't know how this book is going to wrap up. And multiple times his book ends with leaving you in tears.
Yeah.
And you weren't expecting it, but it happens every time.
Straight up, like, I think we've talked about this before, but, like, literally pages before the end of Do a Powerbomb. Like, the pages leading up to it, I'm like, How is this going to wrap up?
I read all of issue 7 until the last three pages.
Literally pages before.
Like, I don't know about this. Maybe this is not going to be my favorite Daniel Warren Johnson book, or not even going to rank amongst my favorites.
But and then he suplexed you.
Yeah, and you realize you had to read the seventh issue.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, oh, okay.
And yeah, that makes more sense.
God tier.
Yeah. Well, but I'm bummed. No spoilers. So Brad hosted the panel and it was a rousing success.
The wildest thing about that is the guy who was the guy who was like producing it, he's like, who are you? Because he thought I was Dan. I was like, oh, I'm not Dan. He's like, well, who are you? I was like, oh, I'm this guy. He's like, well, yeah, what's your name? I'll get a placard for you.
Yeah. Which we told you would
probably. We said, Brad was like, oh, I'm not going to get a placard. No, I'm just a schmuck.
And then he's like, no, give me your name. And he gets onto his phone, and he actually had like an app game up. So he's like, oh, I'm just playing a game. I was like, what game is that? Then he punched in my name. Misspelled it first, and then I was like, well, now that I'm getting one, we're going to
let's get it.
They printed it out right there, put it on the desk before the thing happened, and that made this entire flight through all these various Spirit Airlines worth it, just to get that placard.
Yeah. Convention is made.
Yeah.
So that was the panel. Had a great conversation. Talked about subverting the genre and all that other great stuff with...
I wish we'd gotten into the Q&A a little earlier, because I also felt like people were really bringing good questions.
Yeah.
It wasn't like those awkward con panels that you go to sometimes. Everybody was like,
I literally cringe. Like, there's so many times in conventions I've been to where I literally just leave for Q&A, because I'm like, I don't want to deal with the super fans who are like ready to... you know, propose or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can't do it. I don't have enough of shamelessness to
who
survive.
Would win between Beta Ray Bill and Superman?
Yeah. How did you feel coming onto this project after the last guy who did way better work than you? How did that feel?
Yeah. That was not the case here.
No. Really great questions all around.
And then he gave, like, extensive answers to everybody. No, it wasn't just like, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
He gave, like, multi-tiered answers. Yeah. He was bringing up stuff that he just started thinking about because of their questions.
Yeah.
And even in his answers, too, you know, when we talked about how he was taking the time earlier to, like, mentor an artist, like, one of the first things he asked was who were creators in the audience. Yeah. Like, he wanted to know who were writers and artists in the audience. And really, like, I really love this about him. Like, he always has a heart and a mind for other creators to help them on that journey that he's been through.
Can I tell you, though?
Yeah.
So, when he asked that question, I was like, I hope there's only a few.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want it to be, like, an artist panel, because I'm not an artist.
Yeah.
But I could talk about the emotional BS.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And it seemed to me that he really did cater that presentation based on, okay, there's three answers. Three people raised their hands.
For the artists, the writers. Yeah.
Everybody else here is like fans, fan of comics, fan of stories.
Yeah.
Let's do that kind of panel.
Yeah.
I think if half the crowd had raised their hands and said, we're artists.
He would probably dig a bit more into his
totally
method.
Different
panel.
Yeah. A lot more technical.
I would not have been equipped for.
Yeah.
That probably would have been a lot more like technical terms of like what they should be doing.
But I would watch the hell out of that too.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I bet you could moderate something like that too.
I mean, I would attempt it. I would also just recommend, if you are interested in that stuff, to be watching his YouTube channel.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, he does that every Friday.
Yeah.
I'm not an artist whatsoever, but I now understand certain techniques just from watching his streams.
Yeah.
Really liked somebody had asked him about the nature of his kinetic action sequences. Yeah. And he talked about Masamune Shiro and Appleseed. And that made me very happy because I love Appleseed.
I need to read that. He was going on and on about some knife fight. I was like, I need to see this knife.
Yes. So it was really cool, kind of, and it totally clicked too. I had already seen some of the influences from that world, but to hear it more explicitly called out was really good. But Yeah, that was our. We went and had an amazing meal.
Epic meal.
It was a great meal in the Marriott restaurant.
Every bite was delicious,
and it was way more than we needed. And we had stiff cheesecake.
Stiff cheesecake. Oh, yeah. We started with the stiff cheesecake. No, that was my first stiff cheesecake.
Yeah.
I didn't have the stiff cheesecake.
No, actually,
none of us had the stiff
cheesecake. No, that was, and now we get to bring in for a very brief moment, our extra special guest. Hello, Preston.
Oh, I'm here?
Yes.
I'm here for this?
Yeah.
Oh, hi.
Because we're all bunking together.
Oh, that's true.
So Preston here had the cheesecake. And
how would you describe it?
The stiffiest.
That's even worse. You're making it worse.
It's not making it any better.
His brief moment and only.
Yeah, and we're off. Anyways, we are wrapping up day one. It has been a total blast. Tomorrow we're planning on doing a lot of walking around the hall and doing some shopping.
We had such a full day, and I feel like I saw nothing.
Yeah, and that's why tomorrow we're going to go see some stuff.
If you couldn't tell by how much we talked about it, was pretty much the Daniel Warren Johnson
day. This was a love fest right here, right? We were just in love with that dude and what he's doing. And
Yeah.
It was Everyone go read all of his books, for the love of God.
Yeah. Here's a question. All right, so what is the book? Like, you're a curious reader. What is now the book you give them for Daniel Warren Johnson?
I'm Murder Falcon all day long. I think that book, it's visually stunning, emotionally impactful, but also has such a variety of characters in it that people in various walks of life will be able to connect to a different part of the story. Because there is one main character in it, like their component, their narrative. But I connected a lot of story to another, like one of the bandmates in the story. So all these different walks of life, you can find connection to it and mean so much, and then appreciate the other things that occur in that story. There are multiple panels that made me cry. I've never cried to a comic before.
Yeah.
This was the first time I've ever shed a tear because of a comic.
Yeah. And do a power bomb, I think, you know, to Lance's point, there are, you know, a couple core characters, but the cast of characters isn't quite as broad, you know, so you don't really have the opportunity to kind of like sink your, you know, emotional hooks into different characters and like relate to them and like kind of connect to their journey. Like, sure, you meet other wrestlers, you meet other people who are on this path, and they all have their own share of like tragedy or ambition or whatever, but it's not quite the same as Murder Falcon. I would agree. I would say Murder Falcon. However, I also would say, like, it was funny on the panel, Daniel Warren Johnson is not a fan of Space Mullet. Like, looking back on Space Mullet, he is, like, so upset with himself over it.
When he looks back at all of his, like, really early stuff.
Yeah.
Like, really before Green Leader.
Yeah.
Like, Green Leader feels like the book where he starts to go, like, oh, maybe I'm good at this.
Yeah.
But that was
cool to have him say that.
Yeah.
That was cool to have him say that on the record. Yeah, you got that on the record.
He's cringy about the early work, which I guess like any artist is sort of cringy about their earlier.
I guess
stuff.
I just
we talked about it earlier.
You listen to your first episode, and you're like, oh god,
that's
rough.
Yeah,
but you know, a lot of people love Space Mullet. It seems
I
enjoy Space Mullet. Half a dude doing a rocket punch.
Yeah,
has a rocket coming out of his elbow.
Yeah,
it feels like a first comic. You know, like it feels like he's working out a lot of things, but there's a pleasure to that too.
Yeah,
his like larger frames in that book.
Yeah,
he has space down to a T,
and that's a hard environment to nail down. To be honest,
yeah,
like
he just has techniques that he uses that are like he uses a chain and whiteout.
Yeah,
to get some of the imagery that he does, and it comes out phenomenal.
Yeah. But I gotta say that the new mini, the Pacific Rim mini.
Oh, it's
like we were flipping through. Like we turned to a page and we were like, "What on earth?"
Daniel Warren Johnson needs to draw mechs and monsters for the rest of his career.
Yeah, I don't think he'll like that, but yeah,
well, I do.
Yeah,
he can draw whatever he wants, and I'll read
true.
It.
It's true.
That's
I think I also agree with you. Murder Falcon's probably like my go-to for new readers, but I do think that Duo Powerbomb would work as well. I was thinking about the movie Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Sure.
And, like, the first time I watched that, I was like, well, this is a masterpiece. But it's too weird to give to my parents. You know, it's too weird to give to, like, the friend who's not really into, some, you know, genre fiction or whatever. But I think what this year showed is that there's actually so much in Everything Everywhere All at Once that anybody can kind of connect to it, even though it's such a specific story and it's telling such a specific perspective.
It's less about the characters, more about the theme.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think everyone can pull something out of it. And then clearly that's what happened this year. Because
it won 900 awards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
More than Lord of the Rings trilogy. I don't know how I feel about that.
Oh, yeah, but it didn't have as many nominations, though. So you're
welcome. Oh, okay, okay.
So you can keep that. But I think Murder Falcon does that, too. Yeah. Like, you know, I think when you hear Murder Falcon, you're like, what? I don't know. This is too weird. Do a power pump as well. But if you give yourself to it, I think you'll find yourself in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, we have a full day. Well, it's not really full, but we're looking forward to tomorrow. Trying not to encourage each other to spend money on things. We'll discuss a little bit more about our spending habits and how we're bad influences for each other tomorrow. But until then, this has been a wonderful day one of WonderCon.
Yeah.
And
day one.
Day one.
Day one. Day one.